Well, hi, everybody. It's Veterans Day today. Honor those veterans. They serve us well, serve their country well, and we thank them. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks for listening on the 11th of November, 2020. And just to remind you all, at the 11th hour a.m., of the 11th day of the 11th month, back in 1918, the World War One came to an end. That's, it used to be called Armistice Day, okay? And that was the armistice, an old word for the end of the war. But and we honor vets today, so we call it Veterans Day today. It's cool stuff. All right, again, thank you, veterans. Good job. We appreciate all the all that you sacrifice for us. We really do. All right, we're going to, this is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. I'm Larry Jacobs, and we've got two wonderful guests from ACT, Shannon Hayes, who's a senior policy analyst over there, and Katie Granagnello, who is a program manager. We're going to talk about ACT's graduating class data, who it is available to, and some of the promising practices we can ascertain from it for student success. And we're also going to touch on something with which I did a show on a few weeks ago about their Mosaic suite of resources over at ACT. It's really good, and that's about the whole idea of a learning journey. Okay, so we'll talk about all this as the show goes on today, and we appreciate you listening. A show which we're going to archive at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's our American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. If you're a pre-K-12 educator, please go over there. It's all free. Sign up, join with us in our never-ending fight for equity, and also enjoy our magazine, which is on site, which is called Equity in Access. We're the only media out there that's focusing entirely on these penetrating questions in K-12 education today, pre-K-12 education today, equity and access. All right, we have our consortium. It's for you. It's for the industry. It doesn't cost you as an educator a dime. Go over there. Our podcasts are there. The magazine is there. All kinds of wonderful information, ace-ed.org. We tweet over at Access to Equity ED, Access to Equity ED. All right, the number two, and also at EduTalk Radio. All right, we do LinkedIn over at my name, Larry Jacobs. And we do Facebook over at my name, Larry Jacobs, and also Education Talk Radio. So friend us, follow us, link with us, Access to Equity ED, that's the number two. And without further ado, that's the real thing, let me bring on Shannon and Katie. Hi, Shannon, it's Larry here.
Hi, Larry, thanks so much for having us on today.
My pleasure. And Katie, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks, Larry. We are excited to be here and happy to be part of this conversation and your consortium spotlighting equity, access, and opportunity. So a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for saying all that, and we love having you guys here. ACT is a major supporter of what we do at the consortium. And, Katie, I got to ask you, how'd I do in pronouncing your last name, Ms. Granagnello?
You did a heck of a job. You did a better job than I do, so that's good.
I doubt that. I doubt that. And Shannon, your last name is pronounced Hayes. Am I correct?
Exactly, yes.
Right. Now it's Hayes, everybody. I'm making a joke. Okay? Shannon Hayes. All right? I broke it down. That's all there is to it. It's Hayes. Okay. Okay, let's go on with this. Graduating class data. Okay. How long has ACT been releasing this data? I'll start with Shannon. Shannon, who's the key person? Is it Shannon or Katie, or you want me to just throw it out there? How do you want me to do this? Shannon, you tell me.
You can throw it. Yeah, throw it out there. We'll catch the balls.
Do that again.
Yeah.
Whatever you just said.
This is Shannon. I'll just say we've been about 15 years, we've sort of put it out in this really public format, but we've been releasing grad class data for years.
Really?
Sharing it with our state partners and others.
And how do people, I was just going to ask, how do people access it? Where is that data?
Yeah, so they can go to our website at act.org/gradclass2020, GRAD class 2020.
Okay, cool. And what now tell me about what the data is showing this year.
Yeah, I'll jump in there. So, Larry, like Shannon said,
Is this Katie? Who's this?
This is Katie.
Go ahead.
Hi. Like Shannon said, we put this out every year, and this year we did a little something different. We decided to use the data that we have and put it on ACT's website in the form of a data visualization tool where states and people who are interested in dicing and slicing the data can do that. So that's an interesting piece this year. You can find that on the website that Shannon mentioned. And yeah, so we've been putting this out every year and feel like it's super important specifically for you know, people to look at the data. And the data is telling us, when you ask, the data is telling us that year over year trends, the composite scores continue to trend down. And that was a big reason we decided to do something different this year. We didn't want to tell that same story. So we decided to put the data viz tool up. And then we thought, and kudos to Shannon, who was the brains behind this, looked into the data to find some bright spots in the data. We were trying to tell, we looked at schools who predominantly serve underserved populations and like high minority and underserved students in rural, urban, and suburban areas. And we found schools that were outperforming their peers, and we decided, hey, we have this data. Let's talk to them. Let's find out what are they doing. What's their secret sauce? So we're super excited about this year's data and the bright spots that we've been able to look to and share with others.
Cool. And when you say it's trending down, which doesn't sound very good, okay? What are you measuring? Yeah. What are you measuring?
I think it's a Shannon question, probably.
Yeah, it's a Shannon. Go ahead, Shannon.
Yeah. So sort of the top line number, right, is our average composite score. So every student in the graduating class who took the ACT at any point in their high school career, what is their average composite score? We really see that is going down, a small amount from year to year, or pretty much holding steady over, a 10-year period. Obviously that's not the direction we want to be going. We're seeing that students, we have ACT college readiness benchmarks that are a great measure of whether students are prepared to succeed in college. It's not saying if you don't meet this benchmark, there's no way you'll pass your college courses, but it just gives a good indicator of whether they're prepared to be successful. And, in 2020, only 37% of students met three or four of our four benchmarks.
Say that number again.
So
what percentage? What percentage?
Yeah, 37.1% of students met three or four benchmarks.
Well, that's actually an interesting. Wait a minute, you're a policy analyst. I want to. So, what are the benchmarks? Okay, that's a key question because if only 37%, that represents 30% of all kids. So what are the benchmarks we're measuring? Are they like reading, writing? What are they measuring?
Yeah, so the ACT has four subject tests, English, math, reading, and science, and all of them are scored on a 1 to 36 point scale.
Right.
So we have benchmark scores that represent a 50% chance of earning a B or a 75% chance of earning a C in the corresponding, first-year college courses. So that benchmark is a score of 18 in English, a score of 22 in math and reading, and a score of 23 in science. So a student would have to meet all of those to meet all four benchmarks.
Well, so then the question becomes, I'll say it this way. Whose responsibility is that? Okay.
Yeah.
In other words, you guys haven't, at ACT, you haven't raised the benchmark, so you need a PhD in physics to do well in science. Okay? The benchmark,
yeah.
You know where I'm going here. So noticing this trend, okay, whose responsibility is it, do you think, and you are a senior policy analyst there, Shannon, okay, whose responsibility is it? Why is this happening? Maybe that's a better way to ask the question. Why is this happening?
This is Katie.
Any
I'm going
ideas?
To jump in for Shannon.
Go ahead, Katie.
Yeah, and then I'll toss it to Shannon if she has anything else to add. So I think the one thing I want to say right before I answer that question, Larry, is that, you know, when we talk about that 37%, what we didn't mention was that, you know, just over half of underserved and, you know, the first generation students met zero of these benchmarks. So it's a problem. And what we found is that in the data, like I said, that these schools who are serving predominantly like high populations of, you know, minority underserved students and the
mm-hmm,
students that we
mm-hmm.
really care about are doing better. So what are they doing? And I will say that, like, I don't think this is one person's responsibility. You know, we don't.
No,
we,
of course not.
You know, it's everyone's responsibility. But what we found is that in our data, and when we ask students who self-report if they have taken rigorous courses in high school, those students tend to do better and tend to be college ready. And so there definitely is something to having access and the opportunity for all students to have the opportunity to take rigorous courses, to have an opportunity to have high quality education. And right now, Larry, I think for me, this is super personal because I come from a small town in Texas and a rural community that, you know, doesn't have access to broad, you know, high quality internet and things like that. And so I would say right now, this is a 2019 class, but I think that we will see, you know, what concerns me is the learning loss in the future for 2020,
sure.
When I know that, you know, where I'm from, you know, they haven't been in school and they're, you know, not only did they might not have had high quality coursework before, you know, now I'm just afraid that gap that already existed that we've seen in the data for the past decade has increased. The learning loss has increased. And this is, you know, this is ACT's position for, you know, 20 plus years. We've written, you know, crisis at the core and the importance of rigor in education. So
here, here.
I would say that, I'm sorry?
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yes.
And I'll just comment on that. Kids will rise to rigorous curriculum. And we do students a disservice if we, if I'm going to use this phrase, dumb down the curriculum. And if, especially if we do that based on a race or gender or socioeconomic level, kids will rise. The more rigorous we are, the better they will do. Katie and Shannon, you nailed that right on the head. It has to do with rigor. I couldn't agree with you more.
And I just to add to that, Larry, what we have found is that the schools, the bright spots in our data that we found, the schools that are, you know, bucking the trend, that are serving predominantly underserved populations, we have found in my personal conversations with them, and one in particular, Domingo Montenegro from Doral, Florida, he told me on the phone, he said, you know, I have very high expectations of my students, and I continuously like push the foundations of education. And once once they have a strong foundation and you don't let them slide, I have a very high bar in my classroom. And he says, and they all meet it. And so,
we found out
with like every single school I talked to, and these schools are scattered. They don't know each other. They're scattered from all over the country, and they're diverse in nature too. So, but what I found is that the sort of similar thread was that they all believed in very high standards for students, regardless of socioeconomic background. I thought that was quite interesting, and also the student experience and the personal relationship that they have with students. So a lot of interesting information, you know, that we found as we dug in a little bit more.
That is tremendous information. And the importance of the information, ladies, and to the audience, is that it brings about action. When you look at these results, you don't lower the benchmark so the kids do better. We jump from 37 to 60. Of course, we lowered the benchmarks. Okay? If anything, you raise the benchmarks. Okay? And you force rigorous curriculum in these classes, and you will see the results. And what the data is saying, if I may say, you can hear the passion in my voice, is that we have wronged these kids. All right? We have wronged them, and the colloquial we, have to do better. Okay? And this is an equity problem that just shines through, and this is the kind of information that proves it all along. That this is absolutely excellent. This is absolutely excellent.
Yeah.
And give that website, whoever, Shannon or Katie, I can't remember, give that website again so people can hear it. It's ACT.
Yes, ACT.org/gradclass2020.
That's easy. ACT.org/gradclass2020. Thank you. What do you hear from the states and the districts, Shannon, who are using the data?
Yeah, so states use ACT trend data to compare sort of their average scores and benchmark attainment, all that year over year, so they can see how what they're doing in classrooms across the state is relating to college readiness in their students.
Mm-hmm.
States and districts who test all of their students, often on a school day, often find it beneficial to compare themselves to other census testing states and districts so that they can sort of see, oh, well, if this, you know, if this district is doing a little better, what are they doing? Can we steal any of their practices?
You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. And as Katie mentioned, there's a really big equity angle here, right? We can't close
tremendous
opportunity gaps without identifying them. And so because our data is broken out by different student subgroups, that can really help inform states and districts as they target instruction, as they target resources. It can also prepare higher education systems so that they understand the readiness of their local high school students.
That's right.
So there's just myriad ways that educators can use these data to really understand where their students are and hopefully, improve outcomes moving forward.
Yeah, make the changes that reflect the good education that's possible for these kids and give these kids a world to choose from. Okay, and we underserve kids like that. We talk about underserved schools. We underserve them when we are not rigorous with them. Okay, and that to me has a lot to do with implicit bias. Okay, you make the assumption they can't do it, and then you make sure they can't by not doing it. Okay, it's a vicious cycle, and we've got to be really, really careful. It's really good. And actually, you brought up something interesting. What do you hear from the colleges? Okay, because college professors have an expectation. You go into college, you're a freshman, okay? They expect you to be able to read on the 12th grade level. A lot of kids are reading on a 5th grade level, okay? What are you hearing from the colleges as they explore this data? Katie, I'll go to Katie
one.
I don't know. Yeah.
That's a good question. You know, Larry, we have seen time and time again that what the grad class data show is that oftentimes what's being taught in college might not match up with what's being taught in high school. So we work really hard, and we send out a survey every 3 years of about this. And so the National Curriculum Survey, which we just completed, it will be out soon. I don't know when, but we do that. So we take the grad class data, but also we go further, and we survey professors, we survey high school teachers. I'm a former teacher myself, and we have a ton of teachers at ACT. That's the foundation of ACT. And so that's a big piece of how we how we calibrate the tests. And we try to match that up. So what we found is that there are gaps in some of the STEM fields and in engineering and specifically. And so we try to tailor our tests to that and, you know, re-navigate and calibrate the test as you see fit. So you brought up something very important that it will be coming out soon. We do every few years to re-examine that.
I'm not surprised. You guys are pretty good. ACT has a great center on equity and learning, by the way, everybody. You can Google that, the ACT Center on Equity, for Equity and Learning, and it's really a good group. I know you identified schools, and I think you touched on this, with promising practices that have improved student learning. And I think that comes out in this data. What can you tell me about some of them? And Shannon, is that you? Well, help me. I don't know who.
Yeah, I'll take this one. So Shannon wrote the paper. So Shannon was the mastermind behind pulling this and doing this. And so this was the paper, the companion piece to the grad class data release that was a DataViz tool.
Wow.
The Promise Practices piece was what we did. We identified exemplary high schools that, you know, were increasing students' college and career readiness. And so we highlighted, I believe, four or five high schools in that paper. Danville High School and Doral High School, and one here in Texas. And so a number of them. And what we found is, in talking to them, what are they doing, and how can ACT be a facilitator of that conversation? So how can we bring these schools and school officials together and have a larger conversation, and so they can share out their promising practices? So what we found, and this will be no surprise to you, Larry, and I talked about it earlier, but rigorous course taking was a big piece of that. A lot of the teachers, what they did was they infused many of their courses with some soft skill work too. So presentation skills, foundational skills. Every single school put a big emphasis on the foundation and basics. And once you have that, you can really, really, you know, be successful. And then I think the one thing I want to highlight here is that the Uplift School in Dallas, what they're doing is they have a really great accountability system for students and teachers, where the students essentially meet once a week with a teacher, and that teacher remains steady with them all year. And that teacher, you know, asks them how they're doing and where they're at, and then also follows up with them on any, you know, coursework that they might have missed. And so her name is Gracia. Yeah, what she told me was that that's an opportunity in that moment to have the kids own their schoolwork. So they're not going over the students to talk to parents or mom and dad or,
mm-hmm.
you know, they are giving students ownership of the of their own choices. And I think that she said that was they found that to be a really interesting piece of their success. And she felt like that was a big part of their success, and that they put an emphasis on student experience and the relationships. And so I thought that was an interesting takeaway. Shannon, do you want to add anything else to this?
Jen?
Yeah. I think Katie said it really well. I would just emphasize that, you know, these schools, the five schools profiled in the paper had, I think, pretty uniformly really high expectations for their students. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they said you are perfectly capable of succeeding at a very high level, but they also backed that up with resources, and they had, you know, tutoring and special classes, and they really used ACT data or other data to help inform instructions. And so you're setting students up for success, right? You have high expectations, but you're also supporting them in meeting those expectations.
Yeah, and that key is, of course, under-resourced is the key phrase there. We got to make sure schools are not under-resourced. That is a real challenge. I mean, it's just brutal out there. And your testing and data, okay, shows the problem that's there. But we know the problem now, and we have to act on it, okay, and make it better and change mindsets out there, because we can do it, okay? It can be done. All right, and we're going to do it. And one of the key things is to change expectations and give the kids rigorous curriculum, et cetera. You mentioned something before. You talked about ownership of learning. All right, and that's a key thing. And then I had a show a couple of weeks ago about your mosaic suite. Okay, and the mosaic suite. Okay, you guys can talk about that, but it asks about the learning journey of a given individual, which really allows a given individual to own their learning. All right, and talk about where they went. Okay, and do either of you know about mosaic, Shannon or Katie?
Yeah,
we do.
Shannon, do you
want to
take this one?
Yeah, I can talk a bit.
No, Shannon, go for it.
Yeah, so you know, mosaic really is designed to provide all different types of learning resources because ACT is really focused on the whole learner. And it's not just, you know, did you meet your science benchmark? But we understand that, you know, there are so many facets of a student, so many things that influence learning. So we have our MAUI learning that helps with SEL skills and how, you know, because we know from research how much those sort of, you know, I hate the term soft skills, really impact your academic learning as well.
Oh, they impact everything. They're not so soft.
Yeah.
They're not so soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mosaic really pulls together tools like MAUI and other, you know, online learning modules that can really meet a student where they are and help them take a personalized path to where they need to be. And it's just so customizable that you really do have that opportunity to focus on where there are some opportunities to grow.
Go ahead, please. Go ahead, Katie.
Sorry, yeah, I was just going to add that, like, the with our adaptive, you know, academic learning and our social-emotional learning, I just wanted to say that social-emotional learning and mental health needs are just so important right now and for students. And so, you know, in that suite of services, you know, and ACT has been a big proponent of, you know, having the community involved and having, making schools a learning hub. Oftentimes what we find is that our most underserved students, you know, they aren't able to test on the weekend. So having them being able to test during a school day is so important for us. And you said something earlier, Larry, about, you know, you said something about the students owning their journey, which is mosaic.
Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting about the resource piece and what we found in the data is that most of the schools that we talk about in the Promising Practices, and one in particular, they really focus on teacher development and just teacher professional development and teacher shared resources. And so I thought that it was interesting that they had, you know, a lot of excitement and shared collaboration among the teachers too. And so we at ACT, you know, we are a big proponent of teacher professional development. I think that's just so important to mention now more than ever as we're navigating, you know, what school looks like right now during the pandemic.
Yeah. It's brutal out there right now. And I want to just swing this whole way. When you talk about your learning journey, okay, and also with social-emotional, you guys have MAUI, okay, your social-emotional curriculum, okay, it gives students ownership, okay, of they learn how to do that, all right? It's that simple. And when we talk about under-resourced, ACT has Mosaic, and Mosaic is a lot of the resources a school needs to make this work because it adapts. I did a show. I'm not exactly brilliant on this, but I did do a show on this a few weeks ago. Okay, it adapts to the needs of the school. You can kind of pick and choose. All right, and it's so darn important to understand this. I encourage people just Google Mosaic by ACT. Okay, and you'll see what we're talking about here. There's just a lot of things in there that you can use, okay, that are available to you, and they're based on data. Okay, it's really good stuff. Ladies, thank you so much for this. This is great. Okay, I'll make sure I say the website again before we're done. Okay, so I can't thank you enough.
All right, thank you so much, Larry.
Did you have a good time? Katie, did you have a good time?
We had a great time.
That's good. And Miss Ayes,
awesome.
Did you have a good time? Miss Ayes, did you have a good time?
Yeah, I'm learning that, you know, Education Talk Radio is a party.
It is a party. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay,
that's okay, great. You know what? Yes.
I have a selfish plug. So we are going to talk about the Promising Practices on this Thursday, tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern, and our CEO Janet Godwin will be moderating, and the presenters will be the folks who founded our Promising Practices. So tune in, folks. You can find it on the ACT website. We're so thankful that you give us this platform, and we're always looking on ways to how to employ data to improve learning and create more equitable outcomes. So we invite people to come listen in.
Thank you for mentioning that. Today, so it's the 12th of November. What time?
It's 4 p.m. Eastern.
4 p.m. Eastern, and just go to the ACT website. You get more information on that. Thank you, Shannon, for bringing that up. I didn't have a note on that. I appreciate it. Okay?
Thank you.
That was Shannon, right, who brought that up, right?
It was Katie.
That was Katie.
Oh, it was Katie. I'm sorry, Katie. You did good, Katie. Forgive me.
We answer to either.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
We're one in the same. Fine.
I know you are. You are a unique pair. Okay, join together in holy ACT work, and I love it. Okay, it's great stuff. You two are a good team. All right, thank you both, and have a good
day.
Mary. And by the way, your CEO Janet was just named officially the CEO of the company. She was acting CEO. So congratulations to Janet Godwin. She's a pretty good lady.
Yes, she's amazing. Yeah. We're so excited to have her. Like, she's, been an advocate for education for so long in her own community. So we're excited. So thanks for saying
you should
that.
Be.
We're super happy. Yeah.
You should be. Okay, it's great stuff. And I love to see female CEOs in the industry, which are the profession of education is by far and away mostly female. So the females being moved to CEOs in the industry is very, very important. I congratulate ACT. Okay, one of you two may be next. We'll see what happens, okay? So thank you both. Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
okay, bye-bye. That was Shannon Hayes and Katie Granionello from ACT, and it's a great little website, ACT.org/gradclass2020. You'll be amazed at the information that's out there. Okay, thank you, ACT. All right, thank you, Christina, for helping me set up the show. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Can't thank you enough for listening, and have a great day. Salute your vet, local vet. Not veterinarian, veteran.